after Watergate, when Rice was asked, how come you weren't involved, his reply was, they didn't trust me to do wrong right. Now that was a typical, well-phrased Bryce Harlow statement.
By the time Bryce Harlow entered his fifth decade working in Washington politics, his reputation for integrity was firmly solidified. But it was now 1973, and times were certainly different for the White House. With ominous signs that the Watergate scandal would loom larger than previously thought, the beleaguered President Nixon decided that Harlow was exactly the person he needed back on his senior staff, Dr. Henry Kissinger.
I always looked at him as an elder statesman. When I learned about the extent of Watergate, one of the first three people I called was Bryce Harlow.
Harlow's personal integrity was equaled by his reputation for loyalty, especially when faced with a crisis. U.S. Senator Lamar Alexander worked under Harlow earlier in the Nixon administration. Senator Alexander discussed Harlow's value in the face of adversity, as well as some of the conditions which led to his earlier departure from the Nixon White House.
He was a steadfast ally during adversity. He could evaluate the political consequences better than a lot of other staff aides. See, there was a premium in the Nixon administration eventually placed on efficiency, getting this paper in and that paper in. And gradually, the wise old men like Arthur Burns and Pat Moynihan and Henry Kissinger, to a lesser extent, got squeezed out a little bit by Haldeman and Ehrlichman just because they weren't efficient. You know, Bryce would have 50 calls to return, and he would take a long time on the phone with the Democratic chairman. Now, that wasn't efficient, but it worked in terms of relationships. So they didn't really appreciate that.
By asking Harlow to return, President Nixon was hoping to draw on the breadth of his Washington experience. The president concluded that Harlow's broad view of history was just what he needed to try and regain his footing. Again, Lamar Alexander.
He had such broad experience that he saw the subtleties that many people who were new to the White House wouldn't see. I've always thought that the reason the Nixon White House got in trouble was not because the staff members were evil, but because John Ehrlichman was a bond lawyer and Bob Haldeman was an advanced man, and they didn't have the breadth of knowledge and experience to sort out the things that should be done and shouldn't be done. And people like Mr. Harlow gradually got squeezed out. And it was at that point that Mr. Nixon didn't have advisors around him who knew enough about the presidency and about the world to protect him.
By this time, Harlow was back working for Procter & Gamble and enjoying life as a private sector lobbyist. Going back into the Nixon White House, especially into the eye of Watergate, was not a decision that he took lightly. But forces both inside and outside of the administration eventually persuaded him to return. Former Nixon counselors General Alexander Haig and Secretary Mel Laird recalled.
It was at that time that I talked the president into raising the profile of Bryce Harlow. We also got Mel Laird because Mel Laird was an old fox who knew the Hill. Mel was an expert.
So Bryce said he wouldn't go unless I'd go with him. And Nixon called us up to Camp David and we went up together. And I remember sitting there for a couple hours and I put it to him and Bryce followed up too about whether he was involved with the cover-up. And he denied emphatically that he had anything to do with the cover-up at all. Told that to both Bryce and to me. Well, of course, it turned out to be a lie.
Once he was back inside the White House, Harlow hoped that he could steer the president safely through the political storm that had now enveloped him. But as the extent of the Watergate crisis became more evident, his task became more difficult. Dr. Kissinger reflected with some humor about a conversation he had had with Harlow as they were learning more about the Watergate break-in.
So I asked Bryce to come to my office and I said, Bryce, what do you think happened here? He said, some damn fool went into the Oval Office and did what he was told. And with Nixon, that was a very profound statement because Nixon expected you not to pay attention to what he said when he was very wound up. And so there were all of us knew occasions where he had made some wild statement, which you then came back the next day or even 3 hours later, and you'd probably get fired if you had actually executed it.
Although still hopeful that Nixon could ultimately weather the storm, Harlow and his colleagues realized that the crisis had reached a tipping point with the discovery of the now-famous Watergate tapes. Alexander Haig recalled Harlow's reaction to the prospect of the tapes' public release and the effect that he believed it would have on the developing situation.
His reaction was identical to mine. They were not survivable. not because of the criminality alleged by the special prosecutor, but because of the language, the character of the discussions. When they ultimately were released following spring, I think they were the key factor, not Woodward and Bernstein's book, not Deep Throat's very narrow revelations.
Despite the efforts of Bryce Harlow and many others to help the president successfully navigate the crisis, Nixon's presidency, of course, ended in resignation in the summer of 1974. Fellow Nixon staffer and Harlow friend Bill Timmons reflected on the effect that he believed the experience of Watergate had on Bryce Harlow.
I think he felt he was lied to directly. I mean, a lot of people felt they were misled or something, but he felt that he was lied to by the president, and I think that really upset him personally. I think he felt he had a relationship with Nixon that went back to the Eisenhower days, and that maybe he should have been straight with him.
Bryce's son and a prominent lobbyist in his own right, Larry Harlow, recalled the broader historical dynamics that his father felt were at play during Watergate.
He felt that Nixon, in essence, had the sins of all of his predecessors visited upon him. He felt that the presidency had become too imperial, but that had happened mainly through the administrations of Kennedy and Johnson. He did feel that it was almost, from an historical perspective, a natural unfolding of events with the legislative branch reasserting a degree of control that it had ceded to the executive branch.
The many lessons of Watergate are still debated and written about today. Lamar Alexander recalled a key political lesson that he felt was learned by later presidents, and one that serves as a tribute to Bryce Harlow.
As I look at the presidencies after that, one of the effects, I believe, was that presidents realized at some point in their term that they were wise to look around Washington for the next best thing to Bryce Harlow. I mean, President Carter invited Lloyd Cutler to be his advisor. And Reagan, when he was in trouble, got Howard Baker to come into the White House. In other words, they got people who weren't young and efficient, but older and wiser and knowledgeable about Washington.
In the following segment, we will explore the role that Harlow played in helping presidents and vice presidents transition both into and out of the White House.